from Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The longest federal government shutdown seems to be inching closer to its end. That's following a vote in the U.S. Senate last night that saw eight Democrats break from the rest of their party to join with Republicans in a procedural matter. The deal would not restore the Affordable Care Act tax credits Democrats had been holding out for. It would fund key government operations through January, including air traffic control and food assistance. There are still more hurdles to clear, including a full vote in the Senate, members of the House actually traveling to Washington for the first time in weeks and voting there, too. But as we go to air Monday morning, it seems to be the beginning of the end. The vote divided Illinois' Democratic senators. Dick Durbin, who's not seeking re-election, was one of the few Democrats who voted with Republicans. "This bill is not perfect," Durbin said in a statement, "but it takes important steps to reduce their shutdown's hurt. Not only would it fully fund SNAP for the year ahead, but it would reverse the mass firings the Trump administration ordered throughout the shutdown," end quote. He noted Republicans also promised to hold a vote on insurance tax credits in December, but there's no guarantee those would pass in the Republican-majority Congress. Illinois' other senator, Tammy Duckworth, was on the other side of Sunday's vote. Quote, "Trump and Republicans refuse to fight for American families, but I refuse to give up on them," she said in a statement. "I simply cannot and I will not vote to do nothing to help protect them from Trump's vindictive and malicious efforts in exchange for a vague promise from the least trustworthy Republican Party in our nation's history." She concluded, "This is the time to keep fighting to bring costs down and protect the American people," end quote. I had a chance to speak with Senator Duckworth late last week, when talk of an end to the shutdown was in the air, but before any deals had been struck. We talked about the shutdown, specifically air traffic control. This was as the administration was scaling back operations at many airports around the country, prompting the cancellation of many flights and stranding many passengers. We also talked about the Trump administration's refusing to use emergency funds on federal food assistance. As of Monday morning, there are still cases making their way through the courts on that. We also talked about the ICE raids happening in Chicagoland and elsewhere in Illinois. And finally, Veterans Day and the 21st anniversary of her Alive Day, which is Wednesday of this week. I still think the interview is worth hearing, so we begin today's show with that. Again, to be clear, I spoke with Senator Duckworth late last week. Because of that, no calls today, but you can email your reaction. Our address is talk@21stshow.org. Senator Duckworth, welcome back to the 21st Show.
It's good to be back on. Thanks for having me.
So a lot is happening in Washington, I understand, as we are recording this Thursday afternoon with the shutdown. So I'm going to try and, you know, frame this in a way that, you know, we can talk about some of the broader issues because things may be well changed by the time listeners actually get to hear this. But as we're recording Thursday afternoon, federal food assistance is still not available for the nearly 2 million Illinoisans who rely on it. I wonder what message you have for your constituents who might be having to go without meals for going on a week now.
Well, I'm going to tell them that President Trump has the money. He actually has $6 billion at his disposal to provide them with those SNAP benefits. As someone who grew up relying on food stamps before they were called food stamps, before they were called SNAP, I know what it's like to go hungry. I know what it's like to go into the grocery store and, you know, with your last $5, try to stretch that to cover a week's worth of sandwiches. And I got to tell you, he's got $6 billion in a contingency fund and he's choosing not to spend it on our most hungry and our most vulnerable, all those kids. And we're fighting here in Washington to get him to go ahead and pay those benefits out.
You know, President Trump says if only Democrats would end the shutdown, that money would start flowing again. What do you say to that?
Well, he's lying because he already has that money. He's got $6 billion. Don't trust me. Trust the courts. There was just a court ruling that he needs to actually provide those payments. He has that money. He's just choosing not to spend it.
So again, everything is moving after more than a month of not much moving, at least publicly. Everything seems to be moving pretty quickly as we're recording this on Thursday. I understand the Republicans say there may be a vote as early as Friday of this week. I know Democrats were strategizing during a lunch meeting today about the shutdown. So broadly, what do you say to voters about you know, why this shutdown, in your view as a Democrat, was worth the pain it's caused.
Well, remember that you have to ask President Trump why he shut down government. I have been willing to vote to continue to fund government. I just want to make sure that we fund the tax credits to middle-class families so that we don't see people's healthcare costs skyrocket. President Trump hasn't sat down with Democrats even once since before the shutdown happened. We had one meeting with him, and then the shutdown, he shut down government, and then he's not met with us once. He even left the country. We've not had a single formal negotiation session with any of the Republican leaders. Speaker Johnson left town. I mean, I'm here in Washington, and Speaker Johnson, they haven't even been in town for months. He sent everybody home. So there's nobody to negotiate with. What I would say to people is call the White House, send emails and text messages to the White House or your Republican congressman, and tell them, negotiate, come talk to us. Democrats are very united in this. We just want to make sure that we protect your health care so that your health insurance premiums don't go from $7,000 a year to $24,000 a year, because that's what the Kaiser Family Foundation says is going to happen to a couple over the age of 55. That's what they're going to see their increase is going to be. We can't afford that.
What does it say about America that so many Americans seem to be living their lives, and unless you are someone who is, you know, dependent on the SNAP food assistance, or maybe air traffic control has been a problem here and there that may be bigger in the future, depending on how things go, that so many people don't seem to be affected, or that the shutdown, I don't know, it has the feeling to me, and maybe your perspective is different in Washington, but the perspective to me is it just doesn't feel like as sort of much of a crisis as it has in other shutdowns. And I wonder if you, what your perception is of that as this has been playing out for more than a month now.
Well, I asked people to take a look at your health insurance premium letters from your health insurance companies for next year. Yes, we're trying to get the tax credits extended for those people who are on the Affordable Care Act exchange. But even if you get your health insurance through private insurance through your employer, right now, the figures have come out. In Illinois, the insurance industry put out the numbers, what the increase is going to be, and it's about 30% increase. So people should see the very real reality check of what these health insurance premiums are going to be for them starting in 1 January. And that's what I'm fighting here for. I have a very simple message to my Republican colleagues. Number one, come negotiate with me. Number two, don't make health insurance more expensive for the average middle-class income families across this country.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening to an interview I recorded with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth late last week. This was before the news of the seeming beginning of the end of the government shutdown had broken. So we talked about that. We also talked about the ongoing immigration enforcement in Chicago and elsewhere in Illinois. I also want to ask you about immigration enforcement. Obviously, that has been a huge issue here in Illinois. It started in Chicagoland, but now even downstate communities have seen people taken by immigration enforcement, Border Patrol, clashing with the residents who come out to demonstrate against them. You know, there's even a court filing that alleged an agent egged on his colleagues in deploying tear gas in a residential neighborhood by saying, "Throw it for fun." Democrats in Congress, I realize, are limited in the way and what they can do about that now. But I wonder if you're thinking ahead about, you know, what sort of individual accountability there may be for the behavior we've been seeing.
Well, one of the things I've said to people is remain peaceful in your protests, but record everything, and that you have the right to record everything as bystanders. And we need all of that film footage, because that's what we're seeing, right? ICE is repeatedly lying to people. And they will continue to lie to the American people. And they are even lying in courts. I mean, we just had a ruling in Chicago where the judge said that ICE and DHS has been lying to the court and misrepresenting what happened. I mean, we had a case where we had a priest in Chicago who was standing on the sidewalk praying peacefully for the ICE agents who were up on top of the building as snipers. And as soon as he stopped praying, turned around and started to walk away, they shot him in the head. They shot him in the head with pepper spray bullets. And we only have evidence of that because somebody was videotaping it, and we have video footage of it. Similarly, it's horrifying that they are basically kidnapping people off the streets of our cities, And so what I say to people is, number one, be peaceful. Number two, record everything. These ICE agents are out of control. And you should know that many of the professional DHS and ICE agents that were there in the agencies have quit because they cannot operate in this very lawless effort that these ICE agents, these new guys that President Trump and Kristi Noem has brought into onto duty, are the way they're acting. And frankly, it is egregious what they're doing to innocent civilians. I want convicted felons. I want violent criminals taken off of our streets. But DHS's own data says that of all the people that they have grabbed and detained, less than 13% have been felons or violent criminals. Less than 13%. So they are, you know what? They need to stop going after preschool teachers and the tamale lady from the Home Depot parking lot. And they need to start going after the real bad guys, those felons. Go focus on them. Get them out of the country.
Is there a thought that there's going to be some need to wholesale sort of re-envision how immigration law enforcement works, how the Border Patrol operates in this country? I think a lot of people have been surprised that for some reason Chicago is within the 100-mile border zone when, you know, you look at a map, Canada's not that close.
Yeah, yeah, because Lake Michigan is considered to be a border, so they can range from 100 miles from Lake Michigan. Well, here's the deal. We had a deal at the end of 2024. We had an immigration reform bill that was led by James Lankford, a very conservative Republican. And we came to a deal on reforming immigration, and it included, some work permits for people, but it also included you would actually have a hearing within 6 weeks as opposed to within 3 years. And if you were not granted permission to stay, then you would be gone right away. It included more money for Border Patrol agents. It included more money even for building a wall. It included doubling the number of Border Patrol agents, but it also included very humane, practical things like if people are here and they're working and they're law abiding and they have American citizen children or spouses, that we should give them the opportunity to work their way and get to a status where they could be here legally. And we had that deal, and Donald Trump killed it at the insistence of Elon Musk at the end of last year. And so, yeah, we have ideas on what can be done. In fact, we have one that Republicans actually led the effort on negotiating. I'd vote for that bill if it came back up. But right now, I can't trust the Trump administration, not when they're like running into our schools and they're misrepresenting themselves. They're showing up and saying they have a warrant when they don't have a warrant. And they're going into public areas and grabbing people and kidnapping people off the streets of our city. It's un-American. It's not due process. And it's not what this country is about. And it's not making us safer because they're not getting rid of the felons and the violent criminals.
One of the other issues I know you've been focused on as a senator is aviation safety. And this relates back to the shutdown. The FAA says it's potentially reducing traffic at major airports, including in Chicago, because ATC, air traffic control, has been overworked, not getting paid. A lot of this does depend on the outcome of the shutdown, but aviation safety, again, has been one of your top priorities. Do you think this slowdown is a good idea that the FAA is saying it's going to deliver this weekend?
I think it's important to keep our airspace safe. And if there are not enough air traffic control agents, then obviously we need to slow down the air traffic. But you have to understand, when we started this year, we had a shortage of 3,000 air traffic controllers in this country. At the end of last year, in a bipartisan bill I led with Jerry Moran of Kansas, the FAA Reauthorization Act, which increased funding for training air traffic controllers more than six times, and actually opened up the entire air traffic controller academy and filled the air traffic controller academy so that we could train more air traffic controllers. And we were on track to start filling those 3,000 vacancies on January of this year. Except then President Trump took office and promptly fired 1,200 workers from the FAA. So he has created this mess. We had a path towards fixing the shortage, but now we're in a place where they are going to have to slow down the numbers of aircraft that can take off and land and be in the airspace, because we do need to keep our airspace safe. And I know people who've already started canceling their flights and deciding that they're just going to drive instead, or just maybe they won't fly someplace over Thanksgiving. And, you know, people have to make those individual decisions themselves. But I am on the side of safety. And if you know, slowing down the number of aircrafts that can land and take off will help keep the flying public safe, then I would support that.
All right, let me reintroduce the conversation. If you're just joining us, we are listening to an interview I recorded with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth late last week. This was before news of the government shutdown's seeming end, or I should say at least the beginning of the end, had broken, and we were talking about the consequences of that. We also spoke about Veterans Day, which is the part of the conversation we're going to hear after we take a short break. Again, I want to emphasize this conversation was recorded late last week, which is another reason we're not taking calls today, but you can always let us know what you thought. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can also find that if you're maybe you're driving now, you're doing something, not able to write that down. You can find it on our website, 21stshow.org. Also there, we've got links to our podcast, our voicemail line, to sign up for our texting group, and our past segments. Again, you can find all that and more at 21stshow.org. We'll continue listening to my interview with U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth after a break. This is The 21st Show.
Support for The 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Arts Center, presenting Manuel Alvarez Bravo, a pioneer of Mexican photography, featuring collaborators like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and more. On view through January 18th. More information at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to my conversation with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, recorded late last week. Before the break, we talked about the ongoing government shutdown and its consequences for the American people, including air travel disruptions, the lack of food assistance, and health insurance costs. But beyond those current political issues, Duckworth is arguably among the most prominent veterans serving in the Congress today. Given the federal holiday coming up tomorrow, I also wanted to ask her about that. So we're coming to the end of our time. Veterans Day is coming up November 11th. And the day after that, I know, is deeply important to you. It's your alive day. I'm sure most people know the story, but on November 12th, 2004, shortly after 4 p.m. Baghdad time, the Black Hawk helicopter you'd been co-piloting all day was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, leaving you grievously wounded. I know some soldiers refer to their alive day as a second birthday, and this is going to be your 21st.
Yes.
How do you plan to mark the occasion?
Well, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C., trying to reopen government and negotiating for better health care for Americans. Normally, I would be getting together with my air crew. That's what we did last year. We were in Grafton, Illinois, because we are a crew of half Missouri National Guardsmen and half Illinois National Guardsmen. We got together in Grafton, and we brought our families together. And, you know, my buddies don't let me thank them for saving my life that day, the rest of the year. But on November 12th, all the beers are on me all day long. The drinks are on me all day long, and I get them as many beers as they want and do whatever, you know, and thank them all day long for saving my life. And then they make me shut up the rest of the year. But this year, unfortunately, I'm not going to get to spend with my buddies. Well, we'll call each other. We were hit, as you said, right after 4 p.m. Baghdad time, which is a little after 9 a.m. Here in the Midwest. And we start calling each other about that time. And I call each one of my buddies and thank them for saving my life, and tell them that I wake up every day trying to honor the sacrifices they made to save me. And try to honor, you know, with what I do every day here. And I'll explain to them why we can't get together this year, because I'm actually here trying to live up to that honor. To honoring them by making sure that I get health care for all Americans.
You speak of health care, and you wrote extensively in your memoir, which we talked about a few years ago, I think Every Day is a Gift was the title of that, about the difficult road to recovery you had and how you don't even remember much of it, probably mercifully. Can you talk about that? Is recovery still something that you're, you know, dealing with on an ongoing basis, and what that's like for you?
Very much so. I actually just 2 weeks ago had significant surgery on one of my amputations, to revise one of my amputations, 21 years after the effect, after the first the amputation happened, and they just revised it, and I spent a week in Walter Reed Hospital. It's why I feel so strongly that we have to keep the VA strong And we as a nation must keep our covenant with our military men and women and our veterans, and that we need to fund the VA and we need to fund the healthcare, because I know from firsthand experience that the wounds of war stay with you for not just a couple of years, but for the rest of your life, and that you will go back to VA with more conditions and needing, you know, sometimes revisions. And so I'm a good case of that. 21 years later, I had another surgery on the amputation that happened 21 years ago. And there are veterans all over this country who are waiting to get the care that they need, but can't because of the government shutdown, because Donald Trump has fired so many VA employees and has a goal of firing 85,000 VA employees by the end of this year. And we can't let that happen.
Last thing I want to ask you about Veterans Day, of course, is November 11th. It comes at a time this year when Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is working to make some major changes to the approach and really the culture of the armed forces, right? Among the changes include, you know, making so the outcome will be fewer women get to serve in certain service categories, it seems. I wonder how you're thinking about that on this Veterans Day 2025.
Yeah. Well, let's make it clear that Pete Hegseth is the least qualified Secretary of Defense in our nation's history. He's only there because he sucks up to Donald Trump. He's never led an organization where he was personally in charge of more than a few dozen people. The largest budget this former talk show host ever was in charge of was about $13 million. And he so badly messed it up, the not-for-profit that he was leading had to bring in forensic accountants to figure out how badly he screwed up the budget, the $13 million budget. And now he's in charge of an agency that has close to a $1 trillion budget. What I think is ironic is the fact that the women he's trying to push out of service are actually qualified to do their jobs, whereas he is not qualified for the job that he's got. And frankly, it destabilizes our military and it brings down our readiness, because our military cannot go to war without the female service members. They are, you know, 20 to 30% of the force, and we could not fight the wars and keep America safe without our military women. And now he's trying to destabilize our military by taking fully qualified individuals who've proven that they can do their job, who've met all the standards, because he's got some sort of outdated misogynistic view of the role of women in society. Pretty ironic for a guy, you know, who couldn't make rank himself and had to get out of the military.
Well, I understand we have to leave it there. Senator Duckworth, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, that conversation with Senator Tammy Duckworth was recorded late last week.